Here we are, folks. Big day, big day, big day. We are bringing you our 25th episode of the Revo Convo. Just as a reminder, you can find all of those archived recordings either by subscribing to us on iTunes and downloading the past episodes, or going to our site, www.tinyrevolution.us, and entering the term podcast in the search window. And while we haven't always had the best audio quality or, well, even topics sometimes to talk about, we have gotten considerably better, though, I think, through the weeks, and have been very fortunate to welcome guests such as Diedrichson, Laura Lavoie, Hari Berzins, Sarah Meyer, Macy Miller, Tammy Strobel, Kevin Harrington, Cicely Kolbeck, and a host of others. So, thank you so much for joining us, subscribing to our blog and to our podcast, and especially thank you to all the guests who have been part of the Revo Convo these past weeks. It's been a great adventure, my friends, a great adventure. So, hey, Jack, let's get this party started!
Welcome to Tiny Revolution.
Tiny Revolution.
Tiny Revolution.
A mediumentary adventure of one family's goal to downsize, minimalize, prioritize, and proselytize the plight of the tiny house
in a sustainable world.
Okay, 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 friends and family, today is December the 13th. That means it's a Thursday, the year 2012. We are fast approaching the end of the year, the end of our season on Revo Convo, and gearing up for an exciting 2013. But more on that later. All right, so how are we going to start out today? Well, hey, you know what? Before I go on, I want to recognize another of our sponsors. Each week for the past month, we've recognized one of our revolutionary sponsors. And so today, I want to send a huge thank you to Green Building Supply of Fairfield, Iowa, and especially owner and president Joe Hirschberg of Green Building Supply. You know, we first learned about Green Building Supply after kind of a mutual introduction from a friend of ours at Ecofoil. Both companies were showcasing at a sustainable building materials gathering. And so after that introduction, I contacted Joel in April and began a friendship with him. Now, Joel and his staff at Green Building Supply are, well, really pretty and incredibly knowledgeable. In fact, I remember some of our first conversations. I have to be honest and say that after we hung up, after we got off the phone, I had to look a few things up, and I had to rethink some things because he just is a wealth of information. Really nice guy. The company, it's full. It's just an excellent business. A lot of great business folk there, and they have a family history of customer service and quality. In fact, the Hirschberg story started with Hirschberg's Big Store in 1897 in Pigeon, Michigan. Started by Joel's great-grandfather, Abraham, the general-type store sold – this is kind of cool – sold a pound of coffee for a dime, granulated sugar for 5.5 cents a pound, and 10 bars of soap for a quarter. Now, having immigrated from Russia with his wife Dina and his sons just a few years earlier, of course, Abraham's English was far from perfect. One thing that was clear, though, was his message of service and value. In fact, in an 1898 ad in the Pigeon Progress newspaper, it said, "Every department is filled with the choicest goods to be had in the market at the lowest prices ever known here." That commitment continues today at Green Building Supply, and we're delighted to be adding the company's cork flooring line product to our tiny house. You can find GBS at www.greenbuildingsupply.com, or you can pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-405-0222. You can ask to speak to Joel himself, and if you do, please do tell him that you heard about him on Tiny Revolution. And, you know, last I spoke with Joel, this is very cool. Last I spoke with Joel, he was telling me that they're building a new showroom, and in it, they're actually going to have a full-scale tiny house trailer displaying the finest sustainable building materials. material. So I will definitely keep you posted on that, my friends. Any of you listening out in Iowa, hey, if you are around their area, Fairfield, Iowa, then do stop in, check out Green Building Supply, and again, tell them Tiny Revolution sent you. All right, my friends, it is time to get rolling, rolling, rolling.
That sounds like a music cue.
Keep rolling, 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 though the strings are swollen, keep them doggies rolling, right. Through rain and wind and weather, hell-bent leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love and kissing, are waiting at the end of my ride. Move 'em on, hit 'em up, hit 'em up, move 'em on, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, raw.
All right, all right, all right. Nothing like a little tunes in the morning to get your day started right, especially when it revolves around rawhide. So hey, let's move on to the blogosphere, because you know I love talking about the blogosphere. One of my favorite folks and longtime interwebs friend, Logan Smith, recently started his own blog. You can find it at loganblairsmith.com, although it is titled Smalltopia. Now, most of you probably recognize Logan's name, as he is married to Tammy Strobel, author of the recent number one bestseller book, You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap. Logan's a teacher, a scientist. Yes, he is actually a scientist, a real live scientist, not just someone who says, oh, yeah, I'm a scientist. He is a scientist and also a simple living advocate. He's also an avid bicyclist and was, in fact, my inspiration to pursue biking and kind of look at it as a means of transportation, travel, and hobby alike. According to Logan, he runs the blog to gain greater self-awareness and to become more confident in both his writing and teaching. So far, he's written some great posts, including Why a Tiny House and Not an RV, which was really solid, had some great commentary on it. So definitely check that out. Check out the new blog in the blogosphere. You can find him at www.loganblairsmith.com. That's L-O-G-A-N, B as in boy, L-A-I-R-S-M-I-T-H.com. Now, can I still call Laura Lavoie's blog Life in 120 Square Feet? Can I still call that a well-kept secret? No, I cannot. Don't think so. Why, my friends? Because she is burning it up, posting on not just her own blog, but also on some larger ones with international presence. Laura's a fantastic writer and writes with a great mix of personal anecdote and experience, and somehow balances perfect post length, to be honest with you. She can really nail a concept in what seems like four paragraphs or less, and as a blogger myself, I really admire that. On Monday, she published a post entitled Debt-Free Living, and while she didn't go all Dave Ramsey on us or tell us his, you know, her personal practices of getting out of debt, she does bring up a really great point, and I quote from that: profoundly changing your life can have many added benefits. Now, as a couple, Crystal and I are just months away from being completely out of debt, and I have to agree with Laura. Tiny house is not an answer to getting out of debt, and getting out of debt doesn't mean having to have a small house. But what it all means is that making the decision to profoundly change your life will inevitably bring about some benefits that you may not otherwise realize. So do check out Laura Lavoie's blog. That's Life in 120 Square Feet. Really solid stuff. I've been following Casita Bella for a while now. Now, you can find that at www.casitabella.wordpress.com. C-A-S-I-T-A-B-E-L-L-A.wordpress.com. Run by Pix Monaco, it's a blog focused on one young woman's plan to build a tiny home on wheels just after celebrating her 30th birthday. Now, the posts are not all that frequent, but when she writes, they are really insightful, revealing, and in my opinion, intimate. You get a real sense of who Pix is and what she's trying to do. Her most recent post is what I want to draw attention to, though, because while many of us have written about windows for a tiny house, I think she's done the best job combining advice with personal experience. So, again, you can find pics in the Casita Bella as well as that blog post about windows at www.casitabella.wordpress.com. So, really, seriously, do yourself a favor. Go get to know pics. Go get to know our blog. Oh, and hey, have any of y'all seen that blog over at Tiny Revolution? Because it's been around for a couple of years now. It's written by Andrew and Crystal Lodum. They're a small family building a 30-foot-long tiny house trailer. They post sometimes 2 to 3 times a week and feature contests, giveaways, how-to videos, podcast episodes, personal anecdotes, tons of photos, and lots of blah, blah, blah. You can find them over at www.tinyrevolution.us. Do yourself a favor. Go check them out. So, hey, that's what's happening around the blogosphere. It's been a good week. We've seen some updates by friends like Macy Miller, seen some updates from Zach Thomas, and we've seen a new how-to video by Ryan Mitchell. So do check out what's going on the blogosphere. Oh, man. Facebook. It is the topic we all love to hate, hate to love. With over a gazillion people on Facebook, it is sometimes hard to imagine that there is another platform out there. And no, my friends, I am not talking about MySpace. But if you're a Google fan, and, well, a Google fan like I am, and you find Google tools to be a welcome part of your day, then you probably at least know about Google+. In the last 3 months, Tiny Revolution has kind of migrated over and is now balancing both a Facebook presence and a G+ presence. And quite honestly, we love the Plus world. It's a little less visually chaotic. It has considerably less advertisements, for now anyway. And is really just a great place to have conversation. And this past week, Google introduced communities on the Google Plus platform. So, of course, we jumped all over it, sponsoring the first tiny house community. It's called Tiny Houses, Trailers, and Foundations, and already boasts over 20 members, which I'm really pleased with. We'd love to have you join us over there. I'm going to put the link to that community on the blog post that accompanies this podcast. All you have to do is log in to Google as you normally would, that is to check your Gmail or your RSS feed or something like that, and then head over to on the far left of that Google nav bar, you'll see plus in your first name. Click on that and it'll take you to the world of Google Plus. So right now over on the community, we're juggling some great conversations on thermal warming and cooling in a tiny house, how to build a tiny house that appeals to ADA standards, and even a little talk about designing your own tiny house to fit your life, which we all know is something that appeals differently to each one of us. So, yeah, come check us out on Google+. That's also where we host all of our photos now. We're no longer on Flickr, effective last week. So do definitely come on over to Google+ and check us out there. We would love to have you.
And so now I think it's time we have a tiny house decorating quick tip. So this week's tip, I guess, is a little bit of the holiday edition, and we're going to talk about creative ideas for space-saving Christmas trees for your tiny house. Now, clearly, Christmas and holiday decorating is probably one of the most enjoyable activities of the season, next to watching National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, of course, and quoting, much to the chagrin of your friends and family, pretty much every line that Chevy Chase says in the entire movie. But transforming your kind of autumn home into a winter wonderland is definitely made easier with the addition of the, shall we say, the perfect Christmas tree. But you know what? We're talking about tiny houses here. We're talking about tiny house trailers. We're talking about small homes. Not really the place where there's enough space to really have a huge tree. And a lot of times you just don't want to dedicate an entire space to a tree. So, never fear, my friends, there are solutions to help, from potted container trees to abstract wall Christmas trees. Really, the options at this point are limitless. If you're trying to find a creative way to kind of house a space-saving tree this season, take a listen to some of these ideas that I've put together for you. First part is, you know, save space with a potted tree. You know, if you want a live Christmas tree, consider using the best part of the tree, the top. Use the top for your space-saving needs. Now, a lot of tree nurseries and Christmas tree vendors and tree farms
are going to have smaller trees for your tabletop. And, of course, they can still be decorated. And you know, you can put ornaments and lights in them and stuff just like their larger cousins. But for a lot of homes, a potted Christmas tree is a great option because it's going to live longer because it's planted in soil. And once the holidays are over, the decorations can come off and still make a great house plant. So don't worry about getting a 7-foot tree. Get one that's more, you know, 2.5 to 3 foot. That's a potted tree because it's already that bush that we're used to. It's a miniature Christmas tree, if you will. Maybe the other is have an abstract Christmas tree. Now, you can go to Pinterest or you can go to Etsy or something like that and see a lot of abstract Christmas trees. And I know in the past couple of years, stores like IKEA and Urban Outfitters and things like that have put out some abstract Christmas tree type things. But hey, maybe you don't want a real tree. Maybe you can't have an artificial tree, so you want an abstract art tree. You can hang it on your wall. You can use a ton of things. You can use greeting cards or Christmas cards that you get in the mail. You can shape them into a Christmas tree. You can use, you know, framed pictures of your family or something like that. Or you can use buttons or you can use, I don't know, Starbucks coffee cups or something. You know, you're only limited by your own creativity. So feel free to just kind of take maybe some, that little cough. You'll have to excuse that. That's like a morning coffee cough, I think. Coffee cough. So abstract tree. So if I were doing it, I would take probably some green painter's tape, make the outline of a Christmas tree that I wanted, and then I would start filling it up with some really interesting sort of ideas, some art ideas and some shapes and cards and things like that. So you can really give your bare wall a new life with an abstract Christmas tree. Maybe another way is doing a tree that displays gifts, you know? You might be thinking, well, where am I going to put all of the holiday gifts if I have a tree? Well, if you plan on using a potted tree or a small container Christmas tree, you can put gifts in baskets or other small containers. You can put them in vases or creative bins or something like that to really give yourself a coordinated look in your tiny house. You could also, hey, maybe you want to make an abstract tree that's a bit of a, I don't know, branches or evergreens or something like that in a pot. And from the actual evergreen branches, you hang Christmas tree, gifts that you've put in gift bags or something like that, so that you're really getting two purposes out of one tree. It's also a really great way to display those gifts. And, you know, just to move aside from Christmas, maybe into Hanukkah, you know, a lot of tiny house people are concerned about, hey, I don't want to light candles. There's a lot of wood in my house. I don't want to leave open flames, that sort of stuff. I totally understand. Luckily, there are a number of menorahs on the market that are actually just light bulbs. And the light bulbs, each one has an individual switch so that you can turn them on corresponding with the night of Hanukkah. So you might want to look into that as an alternative to the open flame. So having said that, that's a few quick tips on how you can use some creative ideas for space-saving Christmas trees for your tiny house. All right, so I'm pretty sure that at this point you are, well, you've probably had about all you can take of my blah, blah, blah. So to that end, we're going to bring on our interview guest for the day. Now, our interview guest today is Ryan Mitchell from thetinylife.com. You can find that at www.thetinylife.com. Now, Ryan's one of those people that if you asked me, if you cornered me, if you found me on the street and said, tell me what you know about Ryan, how'd you meet him, where'd you meet him, all that sort of stuff, I would have no idea. I've just been talking to the dude as long as I can remember. I mean, I don't know what our first conversation was about. I don't know how he found me or I found him or anything like that, but we've been keeping up with each other, and it's really cool because he's got a lot of cool things going on right now, including building his own tiny house as well as co-hosting the Tiny Chat. And he's got some ebooks that are about to come out, which we'll let you know more about as those do get published. But hey, let me tell you about Ryan. He's got a BA in psychology. He's got a master's in human resources. He does a day job for 20 hours a week. And then he also, check this out, very cool. The other 20 hours, he manages a network of 40 community gardens and urban farms right in Charlotte, North Carolina. Another chalk on the wall for the southeastern region. That's right. So that's pretty cool. He's got a real big passion for community gardens and that sort of stuff. Ryan grew up in New Hampshire, moved to Charlotte about 13 years ago. Right now, he is a single young man, ready to mingle, looking for a tiny house lady. And the Tiny Life, his website, started about 4 years ago. Started about 4 years ago, I think. And cool thing, because he was kind of following tiny houses and alternative houses and that sort of stuff for about 6 months prior to launching the website. And we're going to ask him why he decided to launch the website. But it's pretty cool. So look, hey, I'm going to stop talking and we're going to go on and talk to Ryan Mitchell. So Ryan, are you there?
I am.
Fantastic. Man, we are so thankful that you were able to take some time out of your schedule today and join us. Certainly appreciate that. So, you know, I just full disclaimer here to let everybody know, you know, typically when I do an interview, I try and have a few kind of bulleted questions, you know, to keep myself from running down rabbit trails and stuff, which I'm famous for. But today, man, I'm going to put it out there. I'm winging it because... You know, I'm excited to talk to you. I know you and I have played kind of back and forth for a bit, so I'm excited to talk to you today, and you've got so much going on, a lot of new stuff. You've been in the tiny house world since, what, 2009? Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're new to this game. This is not your first rodeo. So we've just got, man, we've got a ton to talk about, so let's just jump right into it. So, Ryan, for those who don't know, where are you from? Where are you based out of?
Okay. I currently live in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Now, did you grow up in Charlote? Did you grow up somewhere else? How long have you been in Charlotte?
I was born in New Hampshire, lived there for a good chunk of my life, and I moved to Charlotte about 13 years ago.
Now, here's all I know about New Hampshire. There once was a rock called Grandfather Mountain or something. Is that right?
The old man on the mountain.
Yeah, the old, you know, it's the same thing. I used to call my grandfather old man. so it's the same thing. But hey, didn't the old man fall off the mountain or something not too long ago?
He did. Basically, there was this mountain with this rock outcropping that when you looked at it at a certain angle, it looked exactly like this old man. And for many years, they were trying to save it. They were putting all this rebar and everything in it. And then as soon as they... put it on their state quarter and changed their new license plates over. I think it was like a week or two that the man's face kind of just fell off. And so it's a sad subject for us New Hampshireites.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a sad subject, man. That's, you know, here's the thing about that. I'm doing a quick search here because you said crag, which is a word not many people actually use, really. And of course, we know that crag is like a, you know, kind of a steep rock projectile moving kind of upward or outward or whatever. And I actually know that that word originates in Scotland from the word craig, which is C-R-A-E-G. And so all of a sudden I started thinking, like, don't we call... No, that's the word is ruddy. I was thinking, don't we say people have craggy faces? But the word is ruddy, and those two are not the same word. So that rabbit trail right there is totally wasted. I'm not even going to go down that one. Although I do want to say most people do not know that I know as much ridiculous stuff as I do. See, I knew something about New Hampshire. Who would have ever thought that?
Who knew?
So you went to Charlotte, North Carolina. Obvious choice of places to go. You know, I know of lots of people that move from New Hampshire to Charlotte. But what took you to Charlotte?
I mean, at the time I was pretty young, so I was middle school age and my folks had moved. So I obviously went with them, to Charlotte and just kind of stayed here ever since.
So basically your parents' minivan took you to Charlotte.
Pretty much.
Awesome. Now, did y'all really have a minivan?
No. At the time, we didn't.
Darn. But you have had a minivan before.
We have had a minivan.
I've decided to add this to my line of questions from now on. I'm going to ask every single person if they've ever owned a minivan and how that has impacted their life. Because my parents never had a minivan. Ever. And believe it or not, there's a time in my life where that made me feel very self-conscious because all of my friends had minivans. And I was like, why does my family not have minivans? But I'm past that now, and actually rather thankful that my parents never had a minivan. So, because all of those friends that had that their parents had minivans, guess what their first car was when they turned 16? The minivan. Not me, buddy. Not me. Not me. So I won't tell you what my first car was when I was 16. That's a whole other story. But let's get back on Charlotte. So Charlotte clearly is not not what we would recognize as the hotbed of tiny house activity. I'm not even sure I know of a tiny house in Charlotte. Do you?
So I am not aware of one in Charlotte right now. There is another couple here in Charlotte that's actually building the exact same house I am at the exact same time. So we've been actually getting together over coffee and talking about tiny houses and our building process and where we're getting this material or that thing, sharing tips and things like that. So that's been really good kind of resource and relationship to have.
Sure, sure. Well, hey, is this couple on the web by any chance?
They aren't.
They are not. Good. Well, we'll keep them private then, since they're not out there like the rest of us are. But we'll tell them that the Tiny Revolution says hello next time you see them.
Man,
that's pretty exciting that that there's another another family there in Charlotte. What I love is finding out that cities and towns and that sort of stuff, it's like it seems to be that they come in, you know, groups. You know, they say everything happens in threes, but I haven't seen threes as much as I've seen, you know, twos and fours and things like that. But it's very cool because you hear about one person doing something in a city, and then next thing you know, there's actually three or four doing it. And so in uncovering that one, you end up uncovering several. So I know that's what happened here in Georgia. You know, I interviewed Cicely Kolbeck not too long ago. And so that made her, you know, basically the other tiny houser that I knew of in Georgia. And then within like maybe 10 days or so, there were six of us building tiny houses in Georgia. And we actually even started a conversation about doing a little a tiny house get-together or a tiny house mini workshop here in Georgia. So that was kind of cool, you know, to uncover all of that just because, you know, us rednecks stick together and stuff. So,
you mentioned that, and I think it's very true. Once you start to get into this world, you quickly learn about other people doing the same things. I know there's this one couple here in Charlotte that I mentioned. Then you have Laura Lavoy up in Asheville who's built one. I've seen a couple other ones up in Asheville. And then I know of a tumbleweed home that's a foundation home that's built in near Raleigh. So there's definitely small houses around. North Carolina has some pockets of eco-villages. So So there's lots of your Cobb houses and alternative dwellings that are small in square footage.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to I think this is probably as good a time as any, man. I'll make the official announcement here. A couple people know, not many, but I'll make the official public announcement. Tiny Revolution will be moving the first week of January. We'll be going back to North Carolina to park and live. So we will be leaving our build site here in Middle Georgia, headed for Eastern North Carolina, from whence we began.
Really? That's exciting.
So we will be another North Carolina tiny house. We will have some roots still here in Georgia, but for the most part, we're going to be transferring lock, stock, and barrel back to North Carolina. For those of us who have been following, you know, or for those who have been following us for a couple of years, you may know that we lived in the bungalow for a little over a year before we started building the tiny house. So we're going back to that same place. So we'll have access to the bungalow a little bit and then have our tiny house. So things are looking great. And we're excited for that. We're excited for that that next season. So you heard it here first, folks. You heard it on the podcast that Tiny Revolution is headed to North Carolina. But, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, well, maybe, you know, it seems like they would end up, you know, somewhere like Portland or Seattle or something like that. Man, you cannot take a redneck family out of the South. Come on now. I mean, seriously. we would not, I mean, I love that area, but we would not leave the South for nothing. And so, Ryan, we are officially going to join you there in North Carolina, my friend.
Well, we're excited to have you.
Yeah, I'll have to see about getting to Charlotte. I know that the only IKEA in North Carolina is in Charlotte. So if my wife has anything to do with it, we'll be in Charlotte.
That is true. IKEA does bring quite a few people.
I'm sure. Can you, man, could you imagine a business like that? That just is like a mecca for people. People actually travel to get to these things.
Well, and you know, you say that people travel. We here in Charlotte, for whatever reason, really love our malls. I currently can get to 6 different malls within under 30 minutes.
That's intense.
It's pretty intense. And what's even more intense is that they actually run bus tours from other states.
Just, to malls.
Just to come to our malls.
Y'all must have some kind of food court, man.
I don't think the food's that good, but people really love their shopping. And
oh my gosh.
It's a little depressing in some ways. But,
yeah, totally.
Wow. Charlotte loves shopping.
That's crazy. Well, hey, while we're talking about what people love about your region, you know, here in Middle Georgia, we're only 30 minutes away from Juliet, Georgia.
Okay.
If anybody, well, for anyone who's not familiar with Juliet, it was where Fried Green Tomatoes was filmed. So the Whistle Stop Cafe is right there in Juliet, and we've been there several times. And everyone that comes to visit us or stay with us requests specifically to go have fried green tomatoes. As if we couldn't fry up some green tomatoes right here at the house. But we end up having to go there. So look, I've gotten you way off the subject. You've probably forgotten why you're even part of this radio show. So let me reel myself back in here, Ryan. So look, okay, so you got to Charlotte, and what I've read on the website is that you were interested in tiny houses even before you began the website. What pulled you into tiny houses or into alternative lifestyle or not alternative lifestyle? Oh my gosh, I sound like Craigslist now. pulled you into like alternative living, pulled you into, you know, sustainable living, that sort of thing. What? Tell me about it.
Sure. So near the end of 2008, I found myself being laid off from my job at the time. And while I was very fortunate to find some work pretty quickly after that, there was a little bit of time where I was unemployed and job seeking. And at that point, I was able to do a lot of kind of introspection, reflection, and thinking about it of, you know, the volatility of kind of a job and things like that. You know, I have a master's degree from a good university, and I was a good employee that did very well. But when it came time to balance the budget, me and many other people found ourselves without work.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that good people who work hard, that are well qualified, don't always have jobs, or mm-hmm. they're not guaranteed. And so I started looking at the numbers and things like that, and I realized that housing was one of those things that was a huge money sink in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in alternative housing and things like that. And then one day, while I was in this unemployed part of my life, I stumbled upon tiny houses, and I started reading more into it, and it really resonated with me for a lot of different reasons: the environmental reasons, the financial reasons, the lifestyle reasons. And I got more and more into it. And so later on, I found myself taking a road trip with a friend, and along the way, we found out that they were going to be having a tiny house showing with J.A. Schaefer from Tumbleweed, or who will now be, I believe, Four Lights Tiny House Company. We just rolled that out on our blog at thetinylife.com, that announcement. And he, I got to meet Jay and see the house. And when I stood in that house, I realized that there was an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And I also realized that there's a lot of people interested in this, but there wasn't a good resource for people at the time, especially for the East Coast specifically. Kent and over at Tiny House Blog and Michael at Tiny House Design are, I believe both of them are on the West Coast. Jay Schaefer's on the West Coast. And I really wanted to have some, you know, East Coast representation, if you will, for tiny houses. And that's when I decided to start my blog. And initially it was just to kind of catalog my ideas for designs and things like that, that I wanted to put in my own home. And then people started showing up, and then more people started showing up, and then they started, you know, posting comments and sending emails. And it slowly built into what it is today, which I'm really thankful for. We have such a great readership. And, you know, 4 years later, basically, we're still blogging, and now I'm building my own tiny house.
That is fantastic, man. That, dude, seriously, if we were in a church, I'd pass an offering plate right now. That's quite a testimony. Thank you for that, brother. Brother Ryan, I appreciate that. So now we're just going to turn our hymnals to page 489 and see. That was, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear the story behind, you know, some of the websites and things like that. Because as I was just talking to someone today earlier, there's, you know, there are two kind of major types of tiny house websites out there. There are the documentary kind, which are basically one person's story of them building their house. And then there's the informative kind. But, you know, folks like yourself are really have really championed this kind of genre, or rather this third category, which is like the informative documentary, which is not just, hey, look at me, look what I'm doing, but it's look how I'm doing it, look how it relates to the tiny house community at large, the sustainable living arena, and the alternative living arena. And for me, those are most fascinating because, you know, while I love looking at people's builds, and I'm always just amazed at how talented people are, I also like to get a nice, you know, a nice overview of where their mind is at. You know, what inspires them? What do they see? Where, you know, what things are they looking at, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I'm really, really, I love looking at your blog. I look at it all the time, of course. I happen to know that there's 141 pages worth of blog entries.
Yeah, there's a few there.
There's a few. You have quite a catalog. So, and I've even been there long enough to see some of the really crazy things that you found links to post to. My most favorite was and it was very early on. It was probably when I was first got on your site, and so I went backwards and read everything. It's like a USB powered toaster oven or microwave or something like that. That was pretty hilarious. I'm not sure that ever went anywhere. Despite your best efforts, I think that kind of died a tragic death.
Probably.
But, you know, I spent a lot of time posting about 2 years ago online about the $100 laptop, you know, the crank laptop.
Yeah.
That went nowhere, too. So, you know, we've all had our things that we thought was going to be revolutionary, and it just turned out to be a flash in the pan. Which, speaking of which, you know, Jay Schaefer starting this Four Lights company. I've decided to start my own company. I'm going to call it Flashlight.
Flashlight.
Because it's just one person. We're not all that bright most of the time. But, hey, what the heck. I'm going to go with Flashlight, and I'm not actually going to put out any new blueprints because I still haven't figured out how to use SketchUp very well. And I'm mostly just going to criticize other people's designs. That's going to be my forte. So, you know, feel free, folks. Mail me your design, email me your design, and I will criticize it for you and pick it apart and then send it back to you. So I have a feeling Flashlights may not take off, but I'm going to ride it anyway. So, Ryan, when you started your blog, you know, you started it, as I was saying, kind of as a documentary sort of thing. You were documenting some of your own ideas as well as some things that interested you. But now we've moved into another phase, and that's the phase I want to spend a few moments on. And that phase is you are now building your own tiny house. You've reached that point. Why did you have to wait so long?
So I think there's a couple of reasons why I had to wait so long. The main one was, like I mentioned, what started me on this journey was the you know, career change basically in my life. And in that career change, what I did in part of that introspection and thinking about how I wanted to approach things, I really did reevaluate what kind of work I was doing. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was working as a corporate recruiter, you know, hiring executives and things like that. And while the money was great, it wasn't intrinsically valuable to me. It didn't want me make me want to get out of bed and have you know, a good time doing it. Right. So I kind of had to rethink, you know, what my job was going to be and where I wanted to put my energies and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the tiny house was part of that. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I did a shift from the for-profit corporate executive recruiting to nonprofit sector.
Okay.
So there was a big shift. And with that shift came a cut in pay at the time. And I was basically trying to get in as entry level ground floor and work my way up and gain experience. So it took me a little bit of time to get back to where I was in terms of income level. And then also with the economy being volatile, I really wasn't comfortable jumping into a tiny house, even though I was going to pay for it, you know, upfront. I wanted to have a solid job to go along with that house and feel comfortable in it in terms of it being somewhat stable. So, yeah. You know, there was the money issue. There was a job stability issue. Then I also needed a place to put it. And so some point, I was kind of presented with a location to build my tiny house. And I found myself asking myself, why not? You know, like, mm-hmm. what is mm-hmm. stopping me from building this house? And I quickly came to the realization that I'm the only thing standing in my own way. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of a fear factor, if you will, to making that leap and saying, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to build a tiny house. I'm going mm-hmm. to live in a tiny house. You know, it's one thing to blog about it and talk about it and dream about it. But when you start to get into the details and the day-to-day living of it, it's a new level of reality that you have to grapple with. And so I had to work through all that kind of internally, and I decided to take the leap and go for it. So
yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at now. I decided to build the tiny house, and I have my trailer, and we've started building it. Actually, I'm still posting videos. I'm a little bit behind in the blog, but I'll let you guys know. We actually have all the walls up already.
Whoa!
Yeah. So I think currently right now I just have videos up on about insulating, but we have all of my walls framed and they're up and attached, and we're looking upwards towards the roof. So mm-hmm. quickly moving in that direction.
Well, let me just tell you this from one docu-blogger to another. You're only going to fall more far behind because you're about to hit a point where you're working faster than you can document it, because you want to do good. You know, you want to present the videos well. You want to, you know, right now you're at this point where you're breaking out the camera. And I don't know if you – I just use my iPhone. I think everybody knows that. I just use my iPhone, so it's not that fancy. But, you know, you get to a point where you're like, okay, so right now I'm balancing this thing of I'm working a little bit and then taking some video or asking somebody to video so that they can see me doing the work, that sort of thing. So it's this kind of delicate balance. And you're about to get to a point where you're like, you know what? I just want to work. I just want to work, and I'll get what video I can, but people will understand. And so you start to fall behind. But it's totally okay. What I found is the tiny house community totally gets that. And they would rather see – they want to know the process, but at the same time, I haven't really heard from anyone that wants to be a stumbling block to anyone's project. They don't want to feel like this guy is, you know, he's having to do, you know, take these pauses so that he can film this and da 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 da. So you're only going to fall more far behind, which, you know, is fine. And I think for me, what it's done is it's allowed a chance to really sit on your work and then think about what's the best way to explain this, or do I even, should I even try to explain this? Like, for instance, the electrical work for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I really want, because here's what's going to happen. You know, you post up a video on electrical work, and the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to get 10 electricians who are going to comment and tell you you suck and you should be happy you didn't kill yourself. And
right.
So then you're like, I didn't make it for you, Mr. Electrician. I made it for people who are trying to just do a basic circuit, you know?
Right.
And yes, I'm not saying I did it absolutely 100% correct. I'm not a licensed and bonded electrician. I'm just a DIYer. So that's always a difficult thing too. But, you know, I've started watching your videos. I think you're doing an excellent job. And what I think is great is you talked earlier about having kind of this, one of the reasons you started was because you wanted, you know, kind of an East Coast representation. I don't think it's any big secret. We're highly misrepresented over here. And it's not for lack of projects. It's because the areas that we live have a very different mindset from the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use the words liberal and conservative because I don't think those are the best words to use. But there's a different mindset. And tell me if you've encountered this at all. I know in Charlotte, you're in a city. So, you know, you're not out in a lot of rural interaction, but you know, in the South, it kind of goes like this. You're grown up and your folks say, yeah, you know, we're going to send you to school. And while you're at school, your job is to get good grades. And if you get good grades, then you're going to get to go to a good college. And if you go to a good college, then you're going to get a good job. And if you have a good job, you're going to make good money. And with that good money, you can get a nice house. And with that nice house, you'll be able to raise a beautiful, good family. And from there, you'll be able to work a nice career and then have a solid, really good retirement.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're raised up on. And that is kind of the struggle that happens with so many alternative dreamers here, mm-hmm. especially in the Southeast region, is because not only do we have to battle with ourselves about things like, am I going to be happy in 186 square feet? Or,
right.
You know, am I ever going to be able to find a spouse who will live with me in 186 square feet? That sort of thing.
Sure.
But we also have to battle the outside pressures, you know, from family and friends. You know, right now, Crystal and I have friends that look at us and think we are, you know, just one step above poverty level, which mm-hmm. could not be further from the truth. And when we tell them this is our choice, we choose to live like this, they don't get it. And even some of our family members are like, you're going to end up just not liking each other because you're around each other so much. Well, I'm sorry. I kind of married my best friend because I wanted to be around her, mm-hmm. not because I wanted to be, you know, on the other side of 3,000 square feet from her all the time. So, you know, what do you think about that? And, you know, you talked about the economy. You talked about how volatile it was, and now you're starting to build that sort of thing. Do you see your now realized dream of building a tiny house, do you see it as an economically viable way to ensure a good future for yourself, mentally, physically, you know, spiritually, all those sort of things?
Yeah, I think you hit on so much there that we could probably write 10 books on. But
oh, yeah.
I think, you know, when it comes to the South, even though I think Charlotte is a little bit of its own little microcosm because we have so many people coming from other parts of the country to Charlotte. And kind of the joke is when you find a native, you know, it's a rare thing, you know, oh, you're from Charlotte. Like, I've never seen one of you before because everyone is from Ohio or Massachusetts or wherever. So we have an interesting mix of people with a lot of northern infusion. And I think you're right on with the fact that there's a different mindset when you come to like a Seattle or, you know, some place in California, things like that. You know, your West Coast kind of mentalities are much different than East Coast, and particularly in the South. So even in a large city such as Charlotte, so yeah, you do run into a lot of people thinking, you know, you're crazy, or you know, assigning all types of labels and stigmas to what you're trying to do or want to do. And I think it's a big struggle on many levels between you, your friends, and your family, and then the people you meet on the street and things like that. So I'm still feeling that. I mean, I think my friends and family, you know, they've kind of grown to understand that this is a important thing to me, and that they support me in that. But I also think that part of it is that, and this is kind of what I try to achieve somewhere on the blog, is trying to present tiny houses in, how should I put this, a way that a mainstream can instantly understand and attach themselves to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, to use vernacular and, you know, the right vernacular for those types of people to understand, and present it in a somewhat professional type of manner, a coherent manner, and things like that. That so that the people who are just kind of learning about our movement instantly feel at least a little bit more comfortable with what we're trying to do. So I think, you know, that's one thing that I'm trying to do with the blog and with the people I meet in the house that I'm building. But, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle the whole way.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of stigmas, and you're right. When people see you living in a small house, they instantly think you're poor.
Right.
And the ironic thing about all that is that living in a large home in America typically means this. And I did a post on this a while ago called, let's see, I think it was something like Be Weird or something. I think that was the title of it, Be Weird. And it outlined what a typical American kind of looks like. And it means – so the typical American owns a – home that costs them around $250,000 to $260,000, which over their lifetime through you know, taxes, insurance, mortgage payments, and all that kind of stuff, is going to actually cost them between $600,000 and $800,000. The average American carries $8,000 on their credit card. The average American gets a divorce, which are very costly and tears families apart. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that the average American does that is kind of ironic when they're so in debt and they owe so much money and they spend so much money that they don't even have.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they look at someone who paid for a house with cash up front and is able to pay all their bills on time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit ironic when they say, "You're the poor one, but I'm up to my eyeballs in debt."
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because, you know, a lot of my colleagues, at my quote unquote day job, are in a position similar to what you said. And while there actually is a lot of support from them, in fact, some of them are regular subscribers to the blog and stuff, which is very interesting to me. You know, when I talk to them about this sort of lifestyle, you know, I talk to them about also, this is one part of a little bit larger of a plan for my retirement. And mm-hmm. they say, "Well, what do you mean? You know, we have a great 401k. Isn't that enough?" And I'm like, "You know, I don't know anything about our 401k because I don't invest in our 401k, because I've seen a lot of people lose a lot of money if a company sells and that 401k doesn't roll over to the purchasing company, you end up losing everything that you've invested in it. For me, the tiny house that we're building, it may not be the house we live in forever. It may be just a shell of the house we live in forever. It may be the start. Who knows? Point of the matter is that while building and living in it for this next season in our life, we're able to eliminate all consumer debt, lower our overhead, and actually save money, you know, in one way or the other, whether it's in a savings account or in the mattress or through, you know, real estate purchases or something. You know, there's a host of different ways. In order to do one thing that really makes my heart just sing, and that is work less for someone else to make money. Mm-hmm. Because I love spending time with my family. And so being able to put in less hours at a job, whether I like the job or not, but being able to put in less hours means more time that I can invest in life, in living, in my family, in our, you know, our little farm, and that sort of stuff. That's important to me. And so that's one of the topics that a lot of people lose out on when they don't really want to hear what tiny housers have to say. Because, yeah, you know, tiny houses are cute and, you know, most of them are fine craftsmanship and that, and they're kind of a popular little subject right now. But the more you talk to people about tiny houses, the deeper you understand that the reasons are just really multifaceted as to why one wants to live in a tiny house. And I think a lot of people would be better off if they really took a long, hard look, and I've talked about this many times on the radio show, at the difference between their needs and their wants in mm-hmm. life. Because that, to me, is the very epicenter of what makes us who we are, is understanding our needs and our wants. But, you know, I think, Ryan, you and I could talk about this probably all day, and I know there's a few others that are probably listening to this recording going, doggone, I wish we could have us a round table discussion. But so I don't want to delve too much more into that because I get really passionate, man. And I was just, as I was sitting here, I was actually just dusting off my soapbox, deciding whether or not to stand on it. So I do want to break it up for just a sec because, sure. You know, you laughed about Charlotte and who's the native of Charlotte. My friend, Charlotte has a very secure spot in Southern history, and might I regale you with some more knowledge? Charlotte was actually a very big armament depot during the early part of the Civil War. In fact, they made ammunition in Norfolk, Virginia, prior mm-hmm. to the Civil War, and then shifted that to Charlotte, Virginia. And the reason was because going to Mecklenburg County, they could be near the ironworks and farther away from enemy troops in the north. Mm-hmm. So there, thought I would tell you that. And then the other thing, don't know if you know this, but Stonewall Jackson's wife both took up residence and ultimately died right there in Charlotte, North Carolina after the Civil War.
Who knew?
Who knew, my friend? Who knew? Her name was, if I'm not mistaken, her name was Marianne Morrison. Marianne Morrison Jackson, I guess. I didn't know they hyphenated names back then, but I guess they did. So anyway, that was my little tidbit. And gosh, I have really just astounded people today with my knowledge, I'm sure. So look, let's talk about something else that's pretty exciting. You, as well as Macy Miller, y'all have recently engaged in correction, folks, they did not get engaged. They have engaged in a new kind of endeavor, a new enterprise called – tell us what it's called and tell us what it is.
Yeah, so we decided to launch an entity. I don't know what you want to call it, but basically we're calling it Tiny House Chat, and we're trying to bill it as a meeting space for tiny house people – to come together, discuss tiny houses, share resources, develop connections, build relationships, things like that. Because we realize that the community around tiny houses is so strong, and we want to kind of promote that. So we launched Tiny House Chat, and we kind of did it to kind of an interesting model. While me and Macy kind of are spearheading it now, we aren't actually kind of claiming ownership of it. It's kind of an interesting thing because we really wanted it to be for the community and just serve as a connection for people. So while we do kind of facilitate things, you know, it's not – we don't want to call it ours per se, because we're really very much committed to the fact that the Tiny House community is a great community, and there's so many great ideas and so many good discussions to be having, like, you know, we've had today, that we really need a platform to kind of connect on.
Yeah.
And while some of us are fortunate to have local people, not everyone is. And then also, if you do have local people, you can still plug into a much larger knowledge and experience base to learn and share your ideas. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are right now. Just today, we're actually going to be having a Tiny House chat tonight, I believe, starting at 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern. And the topic is going to be families,
right?
Tiny houses. And I know, I'm sure you get this question a lot because you are a family, considering, you know, doing the tiny house thing here. So, you know, we get a lot of questions around, you know, how does a family and tiny houses come together? Where, you know, how does that work? Where are the logistics? Do you need a bigger house? You know, a lot of people get caught up on the square footage of a tiny house. And I always say, you know, tiny houses are just kind of a concept. There is no definition. And I think really a tiny house is – it's more of a factor of how many people are in a given space and being reasonable with that space. You know, if you have, you know, two parents and a kid living in a 5,000 square foot home, that's ridiculous. But if, you know, you have a family of three or four in 1,000 square feet, you know, that's 250 square feet a person. That's, you know, could even be small, or but it's definitely in the realm of reasonability.
Yeah.
So,
hey, you just made me think of something real quick, and I want to point this out before I forget. Socially speaking, how many of us have actually paid money to go into a bar where, or you know, some sort of night spot where once we get in the door, we actually cannot move because there's so many people?
Yeah.
But then at the end of the night, when someone says, "So, what'd you think? Or did you have a good time?" You're like, "Yeah, it was awesome. I loved it. You know, it was so great. Da 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 da." But the entire time, you couldn't even move. You were like sweating on top of the person next to you, elbow to elbow. But it's like, it's such a double standard, because when you apply that to living, all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a sec, that's way too close. You need to have space. You need to be able to move out and to breathe and da 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 da. No, I need someone next to me not to sweat in my beer. That's what I need. So, you know, it's an interesting dichotomy right there, and I'm really happy that y'all started this chat. I was fortunate enough to be a part of last month's, not as a guest, but as just a fly on the wall, if you will. And the format is great. And I'm going to talk about that for just a sec. The format was, you had two guests as well as Macy and yourself, and the four of y'all were available by video. So we could actually watch y'all. And were we on, I can't remember. Was I on video? No, we weren't on video. It was just the four of y'all. So we were able to watch y'all. And what was cool is two of your guests, which of course was, Christopher and Melissa. They were in their house, which has been photographed so many times, and everyone thinks it's so beautiful, and it truly is beautiful. So that was really cool. And then being able to, you know, just being able to put a face with these people's names was very, very cool. And the fact that we could interact not just with them, but also with other members of the audience, so to speak, was very cool. And I think what y'all are doing is really just, it's just cool stuff. And so I applaud what you and Macy are doing. I think it's great. I really do.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think, you know, when me and Macy were talking about this, and like you said, the whole purpose is to develop connections and relationships among tiny house people. And the video part was something that we really wanted to do because it puts a face to the name. You know, I've been blogging for 4 years. I don't know how many posts. It's, I think I'm getting close to 750 or something like that. And there's so many people that I interact with on the blog. We have, you know, tons and tons of people coming to the blog, and then we get emails and everything like that. But sometimes I feel very much like the person behind the curtain. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think when you start to bring video into it, people can connect with you more. And then we're also, the way we have it set up is we have our guests on video, me and Macy on video, and we're kind of facilitating the discussion. And then we have a chat area so that people can ask questions and things like that. And then me and Macy will bring them up for discussion that, yeah. that, you know, that people want to do. So, and we also have our own questions as well. But so it allows people to connect with people who are living in tiny houses and get some of the questions that they've always wondered answered. And it's a great dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, we have chatted like 45 minutes already, and probably 40 of that is me just blabbering on and on about ridiculous stuff. But where can we find you, Ryan? Where can we find you online? Where can we find your tiny house build? Tell us where to hook up with you, buddy.
All right. So my blog is thetinylife.com, and you can find all of my posts there. It's a mix of me covering tiny houses and then also me my own tiny house. So it kind of has a little bit for everyone. And I, you know, welcome you to come out, check us out on the blog, and also check us out at Tiny House Chat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be posting those links on the blog post for all of you listeners out there to easily click through. And Ryan, on behalf of myself and Tiny Revolution, I want to thank you for joining us today, for talking a few minutes with us. And I'm hoping that the next time you meet one of these native charlatanians, you can just blow their mind with your newly acquired information on Charlotte, North Carolina. But again, I just want to say thank you for joining us. I look forward to your build and following that progress and seeing some pictures of the walls up and that sort of thing. So thank you, my friend.
Well, thank you. And when you get to North Carolina, you know, we're going to have to figure out a time for me to come out and check out your house. And
yeah, man, we'll have a jamboree. We'll have a daggum jamboree. Sounds great. All right, Ryan, thanks so much, buddy.
All right, have a good one.
Uh-huh. And so there we go, man. That was it. That was Ryan Mitchell from thetinylife.com, which, again, you can find at www.thetinylife.com. We are thankful to him for joining us today on the show. Hey, disclaimer real quick. I noticed as we were recording, hey, man, I got a house to build out there. So that was not a vacuum cleaner you heard. Actually, that was the planer. Because we've got some really cool pictures of our ceiling coming up as we're planning to get that done. So if for those of you who don't know this already, Crystal does most of the heavy lifting. So she's out there planing wood right now, and I'm in here in the warm, temperature-controlled environment, drinking a cup of coffee, talking to my boy Ryan, doing a little show here. So, yeah. That's the way we roll at the Tiny Revolution. No, the planer is actually running. She's out there doing it. But yeah, I'll just leave it at that before I dig a bigger hole for myself. So, hey, thank you for joining us on this edition of the Revo Convo. Again, I'm your host, Andrew Odom. You can find us every morning, Thursday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also find us at our website, www.tinyrevolution.us. Locate us on Facebook, facebook.com/tinyrev. Follow us on Twitter, @AndrewOdom, AndrewOdom. You can also find us on Google+, just by searching for Tiny Revolution. So, hey, man, again, this is Drew signing off. Thank you for joining us on the Revo Convo, home of the blah, blah, blah.